Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Rural Voices. This month we are focusing on the inclusion of the LGBT plus community within rural areas. Aris is joined by Siobhan Gallagher, who is the new Special Interest Board Member for Rural Youth Europe. They take us through the episode, which includes an interview with Lucas Steder from BDL Germany, and I had the pleasure of chatting to Benjamin Firth, the co-founder of AgRespect, an amazing organisation founded here in the UK, which supports inclusivity and diversity within the agricultural industry. Here's a taste of what's coming up.
I just thought that I couldn't be a gay man and a farmer. That's just not something, because there was nobody at that point in my life that I knew. I didn't know anybody who was a farmer and who was gay.
Yeah, we are having 100,000 members all over Germany, and roughly some surveys have shown that there are like 5 to 10% of our members belong to the LGBTIQ plus community in some way.
Out of the 16 countries or 16 nations that are involved in Rural Youth Europe, only 9 of those nations have same-sex marriage. So I suppose that just shows you where we are in terms of Europe and how much more that we have to do.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.
Right. Hey, Siobhan. I'm really happy to have you on as a co-host for this month's episode. And question number one, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes, you did. Yes, I think last year, actually, at the prep team meeting, I think people were getting a little confused with my name. So I was given the nickname Shay Shay. But I think people have figured out how to pronounce Siobhan. So spot on. Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because it doesn't sound what it looks like. So Shay Shay is definitely easier. But, well, I'm really happy that I got it right. So really good start. So when we actually reached out to you to do this, we did it with the thought in mind that you're on the prep team for the autumn seminar, which unfortunately has been postponed, which really deals with the topic of this episode, which is LGBTQ plus inclusion and rights in rural areas. But there are also have been some recent developments, and you've been elected as the Special Interest Board Member of Rural Youth Europe very recently. So how are you feeling about that?
I don't think it has sunk in yet. I suppose it only happened on Friday and today is Monday. I did get an email from the office today with my new email address, and it definitely hasn't sunk in yet. And I suppose that's probably down to the fact that there wasn't a physical General Assembly, that it was all online. So it's disappointing in that way. But I suppose, you know, we have to adapt and make changes given the current situation that we're in. So, yeah, I'm delighted. I'm really looking forward to the challenge, and I think it will take another few days or weeks to sink in.
I definitely wish you the best of luck. And I remember from my time on the board that in the beginning, it can be a bit overwhelming because there's just so much of new information, but I'm sure you will do great with it. Now, if we return to the main topic of this episode, which I already mentioned is the LGBTQ plus rights and inclusion in rural areas, we're talking to you because you were on the prep team and you probably have a lot more knowledge than I do, because I think Ireland is also quite progressive in terms of LGBTQ inclusion, because I'm from Latvia. And honestly, if last episode when we were talking about like female inclusion in rural work, Latvia actually kind of came out of on top, and I could kind of feel proud that we're quite progressive. But if we talk about LGBTQ plus, I think we're kind of years behind many countries in Europe. So what is your sort of background with this topic?
I suppose Ireland has come a long way in terms of the LGBTQ community. In 2015, it was a very exciting year for us when we legalized same-sex marriage. Me personally, this has been a huge learning curve for me, because I came into this thinking that I was very open-minded and I was inclusive to everybody. But we've been on this journey as a prep team where we're constantly learning and developing and evolving. And I suppose, like you mentioned, out of the 16 countries or 16 nations that are involved in Rural Youth Europe, only 9 of those nations have same-sex marriage. So I suppose that just shows you where we are in terms of Europe and how much more that we have to do in order to make sure that we are an inclusive community and inclusive Europe. So I suppose we can, we hope that we can help in terms of that conversation.
So what were the main reasons why MACRA picked this topic for autumn seminar?
We looked at various topics and LGBTQ plus rights came out on top because we have no idea in terms of what numbers of our members are of the LGBTQ plus community. And we have nothing in place at the moment in terms of any inclusion policy. And that's something that we're working on alongside this. So it's part of an overall picture and goal that we're working towards. And I suppose when you look at the figures that we currently have in Machrane Firm, we've just recently passed 10,000 members. And I suppose when you take into consideration between 8 and 10% of people are in the LGBT plus community, you're still talking that there's quite a sizable amount of our numbers that perhaps don't feel safe or don't feel included enough in our organization to come out as a member of the LGBTQ plus community. And I suppose that's what we are a progressive organization. So in order to be progressive, you have to tackle these issues. And I suppose that was why we wanted to look at the topic.
I'm going to use this to move on to the first interview. So for the first interview, Dan sat down with Ben from AgriSpect, which is an organization that promotes diversity in agriculture and rural industries. And Ben tells a little bit about his own story, being a gay farmer, and also the story behind how they created the organization. So here we go.
Well, hi, Ben. Thank you so much for joining me on Rural Voices. This month, we are talking about the inclusion of the LGBT plus community in rural areas. So it's brilliant that we've been able to get an AgriSpect co-founder on the episode. Before we talk about what AgriSpect does, let's find out more about you. Growing up, did you always plan to become a farmer?
No. Absolutely not.
Why not?
Because I don't know. I never ever thought that I would end up working on a farm, ever. It never even, the thought never even crossed my mind that I would end up, even though I was surrounded by it and spent a lot of time on farms, both my grandparents and my father's, I never for 1 minute thought that I would ever actually work in agriculture.
But now you do.
But now I do, yes.
How did that come about?
Basically, my father needed somebody to come and work on the farm, and he said, well, why don't you come and try it out for 6 months? So I said, yeah, sure thing, I'll give it a go. And that was when I was about 18.
So how long did you work there for?
So I worked there for 4 years, and then I left there and now work where I work now. On a larger farm, selling potatoes and doing trench driving and business manager. So I do, my job varies quite a lot. So one day I might be trying to fix something, and then the next day driving a tractor, and then the next day having to deal with 15 staff on a potato grader.
So growing up, you didn't have any aspirations to become a farmer. You do now work in agriculture and really passionate about it. At what point in all of this did you start to become aware of your sexuality?
Quite young. I was probably, so me being aware of it was probably at the beginning of secondary school. And then I quite quickly just took the leap and came out when I was 14. So it just came out to the first two of my closest friends, and then to everyone at school and my family and everybody.
So coming out at such a young age as a gay kid in a rural area, I mean, I've read a lot of the stories on the AgriSpect website. That's pretty rare to have the confidence to do that.
I'm not sure if it's a case of confidence, but I just thought a lot of people by that stage were picking up on things and saying, it was like, I was quite aware of it at school and a few of my other friends outside of school. And I thought, well, I am, and other people are picking up on it. So I might as well just jump in and come out.
And did you know anyone else in your area that was also gay?
No, I didn't know anybody. I didn't, when I first came out, I didn't know a single other gay person at all.
So having that feeling that, you know, you were the only one must have been pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it was a big jump to just all of a sudden be like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm literally the only gay in the village.
So what was that reaction like?
My mum and my stepdad took it amazingly well. Mum was slightly concerned that I was a little bit young. She was like, are you sure? You're only 14. She was like, you don't need to come out of the stage if you don't want to. But she said that she was very supportive, and she said that if I was definitely sure, then that's obviously not a problem and all of that. My father took it less well. There's a period of time where he didn't speak to me afterwards.
Do you think that your reaction from your dad might be because, you know, that there wasn't that visibility of other gay people in your area at that time?
Yeah, I think he was just concerned about what that meant, and he had no reference points. He didn't know anybody who was gay, who's works in agriculture, or works locally, who is out as a gay man.
And do you think your identity as a gay man affected your aspirations in farming? You said earlier that you didn't have those aspirations early on. Do you think that had anything to do with it?
Yeah, definitely. I just thought that I couldn't be a gay man and a farmer. That was just not something, because there was nobody at that point in my life that I knew. I didn't know anybody who was a farmer and who was gay, or anybody who worked in the industry. So it just never even crossed my mind. And I thought, yeah, then there's just something that I never thought that I would even be able to do.
So did you ever feel like, oh, it would be so much easier if I just moved to London or moved to a city?
Exactly that, yes. I was, throughout the whole of my latter teenage years, I was just thinking it would be so much easier if I go to college, go to university and move away from Lincolnshire and leave. And quite a lot of, like a few of my teachers said that to me, and quite a lot of older people said that, oh, you'll be much better off if you don't stay in Lincolnshire because it's very rural. They said that you'd always say things like, oh, you'd fit in much better in a larger city environment.
And what I love is that you didn't move to that city. No, you've done the opposite. You've stayed in Lincolnshire and got this career in agriculture. Although you had those very initial feelings of being on your own, your reaction is then to help set up AgriSpect. For those people that are listening that haven't heard of AgriSpect, what is it and how did it come about setting it up?
So AgriSpect is an organisation that promotes diversity in agriculture and rural industries. But the whole point behind it was to show people that there are successful people working in agriculture who are LGBTQ+ people, and you don't have to be a white straight man to get a job as a farmer or working in the industry or even as a tractor driver on a farm. And it all came about because, so I became friends with a local farmer who is also gay. So he's my best friend, and we were watching television. We were watching Country Fire one day, and one Sunday afternoon, and there was a story on there about, it was a long time ago now, so there's a story on that about a gay farmer who wanted to commit suicide. And the story that was put on the television program was very from a negative aspect. It was just all looking about, there's lots of statistics about gay people being the most likely to have mental health issues and commit suicide, and farmers being really high risk for suicide. And then basically the outline of the story was that if you're a gay man who is in farming, then you've got these two massive things that are together. And we both looked at each other and said, well, that's not how we feel. We don't feel that way. We don't feel like we are massively depressed, and we don't feel that we feel amazing about being working in agriculture, and we love it. And also, we are very happy, confident gay men. And we both said to ourselves, and at the time I was working for my father, and Matt was working for himself, he's a farmer, and we said that we are in probably the most privileged position out of everybody. So what can we do to create something that shows other people that it's not all doom and gloom, and actually we're here and we're having a good time and we're successful, and that we enjoy agriculture and are very confident gay men. So I'm not sure Matt would agree with confident gay men, but
Matt, if you're listening, Ben is speaking for himself.
You'll have to cut that out. We're also in a position where neither of us could have been sacked, and we could have, if we experienced homophobia at work, we could call it out, and we wanted to use that privilege to create something where we could show other people that that there are successful people in agriculture who are homophobic and who can't do that, because it must be really tough for somebody if they work for a company and the senior management or the owners are quite homophobic, and then them having to deal with that is very difficult. If we created a public place where everybody could see, then it would then filter down. And if we had a group of larger companies, which we have on the website, who have signed up to the AgriSpec Pledge, which says that the companies support diversity in agriculture, then these people who are struggling and have to deal with really poor leadership, then they can swap companies to go and work for somebody who does support diversity.
Yeah, it's interesting, because at first glance, AgriSpec is just a great platform where you share stories from LGBT farmers working in the ag industry. But you are also having this impact on the industry as a whole.
Exactly. If we can show the companies that are supporting the pledge and saying openly that they are that they support diversity and LGBTQ plus people, then the talent that we have as LGBTQ plus people, they will go to those companies and not have to suffer any discrimination. And then the companies who haven't signed the pledge are kind of called out on their own homophobia for not signing it.
And would you like to see a lot more companies signing the pledge? Do you think there is still a long way to go?
I think there is a long way still to go. And there are quite a lot of big companies in agriculture who haven't either A, haven't replied, or B, have replied and declined. And when a company signs up to the pledge, all they have to do is say that they support inclusion and diversity in agriculture. They don't have to, there's no donation, there's no policy that they have to sign up to. It is literally them saying publicly that they support LGBTQ plus people and diversity in agriculture. So for companies not to sign that, I think shows that there wouldn't be, that there is homophobia.
And not just companies, also, let's make sure all our rural youth groups are signing that pledge. I know NFYFC in England already have, We'll get Rural Youth Europe to do it. And let's get all our youth groups across Europe signing it, showing that we support diversity. Talking about young farmers and specifically looking at some of the stories that you've got over on the AgRespect website, there was a quote from a guy called Ben Andrews who says, "I never really set out to be a farmer. Growing up, I was no good at rugby, couldn't drink my body weight and real ale, and didn't fancy girls, which seemed to be the prerequisites for being a farmer." You know, there he's referring to that typical farmer stereotype. He wasn't that lad stereotype. Do you think that it's really hard to fit in rural areas if you don't fit that mould? Is that part of the problem?
Yes, yeah, I think that that's very much a problem. And things like young farmers are all very much, I was a member of Young Farmers for a long time and I had an amazing time. But that kind of laddie atmosphere is all in, like, people wearing shuffles. I'm sat here wearing one now. So that type of thing, or that type of, okay, so you're not a farmer because you don't drive a 4x4, or you don't wear a shuffle, or you can't play rugby or shout the loudest or whatever it might be. All of those qualities have nothing to do with the job at all.
Yeah, exactly. It's weird because there clearly is more to be done and people's attitudes still do need to be changed. I was talking to a friend who's a young farmer about this episode and how I was doing an interview about the LGBT community in farming, and they said, "Who are you going to ask for that?" And I said, "There's so many people that I could ask."
Yeah, there's quite a lot. Just check out the AgRespect website.
Exactly. There is an LGBT community within the ag industry, and what AgRespect is doing and what our youth groups can also do is make sure everyone knows that. Well, thank you, Ben, for giving up your time to come and chat. I think what AgRespect is doing is amazing. You will probably never know the impact that you've had. I bet so many people, even if they're not following the account or liking your posts on Instagram, it's the people that aren't doing that but are still taking it in that are probably gaining the most from it. So if anybody wants to find out more about AgRespect and read some of their stories, search for them on Twitter or Instagram and you will find the link to their website. Read the pledge and let's get youth groups across Europe signing it.
A huge thank you to Ben for the interview. I think it was really insightful. And honestly, I would encourage everyone who's listening to head over to the AgRespect website and check out some of the stories that have been published there, because I think that they paint a really good picture of the reality that the LGBTQ plus community is experiencing in rural areas. Okay, so my main takeaway from the interview was that in every community, you just sort of need like the first two persons who puts the issue on their backs and kind of carries it for the first 100 meters, because otherwise it just doesn't work. Someone has to sort of step forward. So what were your takeaways? What really sort of sunk into your mind?
Yeah, I think AgRespect is a brilliant ethos and a brilliant organization. And I suppose my takeaway from the interview is that if companies and organizations such as Macroniferma and Rural Youth Europe and all of these young organizations and the rural youth organizations, if they are to sign up to AgRespect, they're basically just saying that they support inclusion and diversity in agriculture. So there should be no reason that any rural young organization should not sign up to this. Every organization, every company should be part of this, because I think that's the huge takeaway from it. You're supporting diversity and inclusion. And I think if a company doesn't sign up to it, I think we should perhaps question the morals of these companies, because every company should be inclusive and welcoming to everybody.
Yeah, that's definitely a food for thought, because I don't really see a reason for a company to not step up and sign up for and take this pledge. But yeah, I definitely hope that in the future there will be more and more, and I think that will be the case, because I think as a society we are getting better with these things, but obviously people from the LGBT plus community would probably hoped that this progress would be much faster. Okay, so we heard a very personal story about how it is being from the LGBTQ plus community in rural areas. And right now we're going to move on to another interview that I did with Lukas Stede from BDL Germany. And during this interview, we tried to see what some of the Rural Youth Europe member organizations are actually doing to also tackle this issue, and what are their next steps and how others can do something similar or get involved with their sort of campaigns. Hi, Lukas. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Anders. Thanks for having me here. It's like my first podcast ever, so...
Oh, cool. I'm glad we can be your first podcast experience. Lukas, the thing is, you're actually no stranger to Rural Youth Europe. You've been sort of a constant visitor to several of the events, and I think you're pretty well known by the inner circle. But just in case someone is stumbling upon this podcast for the first time, can you maybe introduce yourself?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Lukas Stede. I'm 26 years old and currently on the board of the Rural Youth Association in Germany. And yeah, as you already mentioned, I've been quite a frequent visitor to different study sessions in Budapest and some other events and meetings and general assemblies. I'm mainly focusing on youth politics and youth policies and international exchange and such topics. And yeah, the main topic of our conversation today about LGBTIQ and queer youngsters all over Europe and especially in the rural areas. It's like one of the many focus points we are having right now. I'm really looking forward to it.
So as you mentioned exactly that, today our topic is LGBTQ plus and their inclusion in rural areas and rural organizations. And the reason why we're talking to you is because we know that BDL Germany has taken some strides to address the issues related to this topic. And so maybe you can give a short background on what BDL Germany is and what it does, and then maybe explain in more detail what your organization is doing to support the LGBTQ plus community.
The BDL in Germany is like the federal organization of rural youth in Germany. We have also 18 state organizations and below that lots of in the municipalities and small villages. Members are working and interacting and doing their things. Yeah, actually, it's not like a topic we started from top to bottom, but it was more like bottom up. So we had in our state organizations, young people have connections to the queer, to other queer guys who are like in this area, in this these topics very close to it and are personally affected, who brought that up to us. We're like, yeah, we are having 100,000 members all over Germany, and roughly some surveys have shown that there are like 5 to 10% of our members belong to the LGBTIQ plus community in some way. For us, it was like at first a very new thing that came up because, well, if you're not from this community, you're not normally not really close to it, and you have to like to just think about it, realize it, and kind of get to know it. The whole topic started in the state, in some of the state organizations. We're in contact with politicians all around, and I started to do some research on their own. Started to do workshops on some levels and try to get into the topic, and then brought it up to us on a federal level. And we just realized that this is like a great opportunity to be even there for a bit more for our members. That's like how it started.
Okay, so 10% is actually quite a high number, but I guess it goes along with the like the actual worldwide statistics. So you mentioned you have webinars and so on. Do you also have like a sort of a campaign, or how do you organize these activities exactly?
Well, there has been a campaign from two of our state members who were like sharing a Dropbox where they did some pictures for the important dates like coming out day, like gay and lesbian day or trans visibility day, and all those things around, where they were sharing pictures and also statements regarding to it, like referring to it. What is it about? What is the history behind it? What's, for example, the history to the Stonewall riots, where something started, to the Christopher Street Day and other things, so that you can easily put it on social media and yeah, make it visible and take a stand in this right direction. So that was like the main start from state organizations. And of course, we said, yeah, we are going to support it. And actually, if I think most of the organizations, all of our member organizations supported it and started to share the pictures and all around, and that got quite some good reactions, and we reached out to a lot of people. So that was like the start from a campaigning point of view. From a workshop point of view, we are having a working group. Actually, we have three working groups on a federal level. One is for agricultural policies, one is for like wine policies and all these topic, and we have one which is like a youth politics and politics in general. And we were thinking about taking the queer community and LGBTQ plus and all those things into a workshop even 10 months ago or something. But then, well, there was one, this one workshop was once not happening, then there was Corona, and so we had to postpone it until September this year. This workshop, and this was a really cool thing because we had some people who were educated in this area and already knew quite some things, but we had also some people who have like never been in contact with the whole queer topic and had like no personal relations to it. So it was like a pretty diverse group we had. And of course, there were some where like questioning whether this is really affecting so many people because they didn't really have a look at it. But afterwards, and also after we exchanged some of the experience our members had and some of the experience within the group who are from this LGBTIQ plus background, really sharing what is happening to them sometimes day in, day out in some cities and areas where they are not sure, where they are strangely looked on and other things, it really grew to them. And I think it's a topic that will continue to focus up in the next few months and even years.
It really sounds like a really good way to introduce people to the community and the issues that they're facing, because I also come from a rural area. And honestly, while I was living there, I never encountered anyone from the LGBT community. And I don't really think that I know anyone who's there now, but statistically, there has to be someone. So I think there's still a lot of stigma in rural areas. I think we can really appreciate what you're doing as an organization. So what are the next steps? What are your plans for the future?
On the one hand, we are thinking about a policy paper in some regards, so that we are having like a real standpoint for as our organizations, because our political views and the things we are promoting within the federal politics in Germany are based on policy papers most of the time. So that will be like one part, but I don't think it's the main part. The main part will be reaching out to the state to member organizations in the states, giving them material to work with, more having some kind of flyer or brochure or small book or whatever, where we are listing up all the informations we gathered during our working group and the workshop, all the information we have within our member organizations, right? Because there are some people really getting close to it and involved, and they have like lots to share, and just to getting it all together, sharing it with them, and working towards being more inclusive, being more focused on inclusivity, and focusing our work more on the demands or special interests LGBTIQ peers have. Of course, they can like just go with it all of the time, but there is like just some specific topics where you have to realize that you have to think about them, like putting them up in male or female groups, and other things which are not as easy if you have like a child or a young person which is like not directly directing him or herself in one of those two groups. And that's something we have to acknowledge, and something we have to promote within organizations to really have an impact and be more inclusive. So those are, I think, the two things we are going to do in the near future.
I think it sounds like two really clear steps, and that's the way to go. So you're a rural organization in Germany, and it's really great that you're doing this. It would be great if also other rural organizations would be doing this across the Europe. So do you think that what your organization is doing could be replicated by other organizations? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think we can share quite some of the things we are already doing, because, well, we as a federal organization, as I said, that did not start it. It was like we are copying things that have been done in our member organizations. I think it could be pretty much the same steps if you look at like Rural Youth Europe, and that we can share our experience there. Maybe you have to translate some things and try to adapt the steps we did in the workshop more or less.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you, Lukas, for this insight into BDL Germany's work into LGBT inclusion in rural organizations and rural areas. Before we go, is there anything else you would like to add?
Well, actually, I really appreciate having these interesting topics on the podcast. So I'm really looking forward to the next one, because I'm not a big podcast listener, but Rural Voices has been one which I at least sometimes adapt to. So thank you very much for the opportunity, and I think the event will take place before this podcast will be released. So I hope that we can share some ideas there, and in the future, keeping this topic on our agenda.
Thank you to Lucas for the interview. I think we heard quite a lot that BDL Germany has been doing and how they started doing it. So is there anything that really stood out for you, Siobhan?
Yes, I suppose it was a great interview. And I suppose my main take from it was the fact that the grassroots members of BDL Germany spoke up and came to the board and said that they wanted to look at this and look at making BDL Germany a more progressive organization. So I think you have to, as he said, they worked from the bottom up, not from the top down. So we need to listen to our members and hear their stories and take on their stories and take on their message and work with it and work with them.
Yeah, this is actually the exact same thing that I really picked up on, because it's very true that if the problem doesn't affect you directly or someone you know, it's just really easy to assume that it doesn't exist at all. So it's really important that there are people who step up and bring up the issues. Otherwise, things just won't happen, because very often it's not even ignorance. It's just that you're not really aware. And I guess it is kind of an ignorance in that way, but still. But they have taken several strides. And Lucas also pointed out some of the things, how other organizations could recreate what they have been doing. Do you have maybe any other tips what organizations could do to help the community?
Yeah, I suppose communication is obviously a priority, and I suppose it's something that we shouldn't forget about. In a world where we have Zoom and we have so much technology at our fingertips, we need to rely on the member organizations in Rural Youth Europe and work together. So why not reach out to another member organization? If other member organizations are working on this topic, reach out to us and let us know, so that all of the member organizations are aware. It's, I suppose, starting small and having those smaller conversations and making sure that our members feel safe and feel included to come to our meetings and to come to our events. You know, the three key messages that I would take from the two interviews and the things that I would say to any member organization when they're thinking of LGBTQ plus people is to be mindful, to be respectful, and be supportive. I think if you get those three things right, you can achieve anything you want to achieve.
So if we continue talking about communication, as I already mentioned, you were supposed to be organizing the autumn seminar on this topic, but as it was not happening, instead, MACRA, together with Rural Youth Europe, organized the webinar called Commencing Our Dialogue, LGBTI plus Positive Europe. So can you tell us a bit more about the webinar and what was discussed there?
So we had obviously supposed to be hosting the autumn seminar, but given the situation, we changed to a webinar. We had some speakers. We had Maria Walsh, who's a MACRA and Affirma member and also a member of the European Parliament. We had Aoife Martin, who is a trans woman, and she was the first woman to transgender in her organization globally, a MasterCard, which is a huge global organization. And then we had Dr. Darko Scrobo. He is an LGBTQ plus member, and he's a doctor in Ireland. So we invited the three people along, and they were absolutely delighted to get involved. With regards to Maria, we asked her about her public life, and she was the Rose of Tralee here in Ireland. So it's a pageant for Irish people. And we asked her in terms of that. She was the first openly gay person who was a Rose of Tralee in this country. We spoke to her about her public life and her journey to becoming elected, and how, coming from a rural part of Ireland, how the people at the doorstep spoke with her. Then we had Aoife Martin. As I said, she transitioned in the workplace, And something very important stuck out from her conversation in the fact that she said that we shouldn't have to celebrate and we shouldn't have to have a pride parade every year. And at the time I thought, wow, that's a bold statement to make. When she explained her story behind it, it made me realize that actually she is right. We shouldn't have to have a pride festival purely to make sure that people feel included. They should feel included all of the time. And then we had Dr. Darko Skroba. So he is a European citizen who moved to Ireland, and he spoke about his journey through life and, you know, coming out, and he's now engaged to an Irishman, and we heard his story as well in terms of the workplace. So we got three very different views, and I think it was a very well attended event. And since then, the webinar has been viewed over 1500 times. So I suppose that to us is a huge success. And I suppose if it helps get the message out there, then to me, that's a huge success. We also had a quiz involved in it in terms of getting people to look at their biases. And one of the participants in the webinar, Maria Walsh, she also took the quiz, and she said that she had some issues as well. So we can't lose focus or lose track here. We're not the only people that have issues in terms of our biases. The LGBTQ plus members also have biases as well. So we're not alone. We're all learning. This is a learning curve for all of us. So yeah, it was a very exciting event. And the prep team that put the event together, I think credit has to go to them. They were absolutely excellent, and they pulled off the event in short notice. So well done to the local team for doing that.
I can definitely agree with that. I didn't see all of it, but I saw most of it. And I really also appreciated all the information that they provided, because there was so much that I didn't know before. And also the panelists, they were really engaging, and it was really, really interesting to listen to them. The webinar took place on the 2nd of November, but it's still available, right?
It is. It's still available on our Facebook page. If anybody searches for Mochrane Afirma, they will be able to see it in our recent videos. If they can't get it, please contact either Rural Youth Europe or myself or any member of the board, and they'll certainly be able to send it on. So, you know, it is there for anybody to look back and listen to.
I definitely encourage everyone to head over and when you have some free time and watch the webinar, because as I said, it's really insightful and I personally found it very helpful, and I think you will enjoy the content as well. Siobhan, is there anything else you would like to mention about this topic in general before we leave?
I suppose, look, utilize the network that is Rural Youth Europe and reach out to one another and share your thoughts and ideas. Because it's only through talking to one another that you can learn and develop and progress as organizations. The information is there, just share it amongst yourselves. And I think next year, when it comes to the autumn seminar, you will know an awful lot more. And I think that will help with the development of the autumn seminar and what we plan to do.
I really hope that the seminar next year can take place, because I think this topic is really important. And even though it's really good to do it online and actually this way to reach even more people, it's probably better to do it in a smaller group and to really go through all the issues and to better understand the topic. And then these people can further distribute this information back in their communities and organizations. So thank you, Siobhan. Thank you for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking your time to do this. And I also really appreciate your insight on the topic. And yeah, thanks.
You are listening to Rural Voices, the Rural Youth Europe podcast.